Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your hosts, Joe Rowles and Jeff Essery.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I'm Jeff Essery.
And I am Joe Rowles. And we are joined today by Mile High Report's Joe Mahoney. Welcome, Joe Mahoney.
Hey, guys.
Joe is famous for the tackle conversations that we had over the last two off seasons. We've talked about Garrett Bowles. Those were some of the funnest, I think, podcasts we've done. The two different ones that we had you on breaking down Garrett Bowles and his game. So always a pleasure to have Joe on the show.
I want to throw in, I still am getting crap for what we said about Garrett Bowles last year.
And yeah, well, it was tackle analysis that actually got me on Ken McCusick's radar. He saw the piece that I did on tackle arm length, and he was like, "Hey, this is something that I'm interested in," because he does film study, but he ostensibly focuses on the offensive line. And so, here's a guy who's does film study, does statistical analysis, and is an analyst specifically about how the Ravens offensive line plays. So he and I have had some pretty deep in-depth conversations. We talked about the tackle arm length, but we also talked about, where teams get their starting offensive tackles. Because that one was kind of an interesting study to do. Go Irish.
Stanford or Notre Dame.
Yeah. Or Michigan.
I will say, though, on the Garrett Bowles thing, I'm pretty sure we'd have to go back. And I think we said at the time, like, I'll happily eat crow if he turns out to be good. Like, we all wanted him to be good. But I think we even said in there, like, this isn't saying he can't improve. But at this moment, everything up to this moment has not been good. But he flipped the switch, and it worked out.
He hadn't shown the progression that we would have expected in a third year offensive tackle, in terms of looking at what he had done in his senior season in college, and then comparing it to the same exact mistakes that he was making in his third season in the NFL.
And then I would say in 2020, it was pretty clear after the first 2 weeks that something the switch was flipped.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it even in the chat. It's like in It's not like we throw this kind of stuff out. It's the same with Drew Lock, where it's like, oh, you're just rooting for him to fail or whatever. It's like, no, I want to see these guys succeed. Like, even if we put the analysis out that says he's not succeeding, like, we're just based on what we see. And in two games, I mean, I remember messaging, like, us messaging on that of like, okay, there's something's up. He's done something different. He looks a lot better.
Well, and I think that's one of those things that a lot of people either listening and or reading a lot of our content really miss is like, yes, my job is to analyze and be as objective as I can watching what I'm watching, and I'm not going to bullshit you. But as a fan, yeah, I want every single player on the Broncos to turn into a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And when the tape actually backs that up, we'll scream to the, you know, to the rooftops about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's been what, 6 years now of really shitty football on the offensive side, and there hasn't been much to crow about.
That's very true.
Well, I kind of on that note.
On the note of shitty football, let's dig in.
Yeah, that's a good segue. The question I really want to pose to you guys, and again, I didn't give you any warning, so bear with me. Kind of, how confident are you? We're now less than 2 weeks to go until training camp opens for the 2021 season. How confident are you in the direction of the Broncos?
Okay. Well, it's been a roller coaster. I'm much more confident now than what I was after the draft, because the draft, at least for me, was a 1-2 punch. Number one, we didn't get Fields at 9. And I was certain that we were going to take him. And I was certain, and I'm still certain, that he's going to be a very, very good NFL quarterback. But then the second gut punch to me was the fact that we didn't even draft an offensive tackle. So, you know, that's what I wrote that up right after the draft. This is 4 years in a row where we haven't taken a tackle, not a single offensive tackle. Now, admittedly, you could say that Reisner played tackle in college, and I've seen quotes from the coaches saying that he is an emergency tackle, but to this point in his NFL career, through two seasons, he's yet to take a single snap at tackle. So we have not drafted a tackle. And yes, Mike Munchak has been great throughout his career, getting day three and undrafted guys and turning them into starting offensive linemen. But, you know, to this point, I don't know that he really did that with Elijah Wilkinson. And was he a starter? Yeah, by default, but he wouldn't have been a starter if Juwan James had, you know, been able to play. And Calvin Anderson is kind of like, at this point, he's still Godot. We're kind of waiting for him to develop, and, you know, he may never get there. So, you know, we went out and after the draft and signed two bargain basement tackles. And admittedly, I mean, we literally have less money invested in our offensive tackle group for the 2021 season in terms of cap than some teams have invested in their starting left tackle.
Yep.
Because Massey and Irving and even Bowles' cap hit for 2021 is only $5 million. So, I mean, it's $5 million is Bowles, and he's the highest, and we go down from there. I think all told, it's something like $12 million in cap space tied up in our tackle group. And that's including Drew Himmelman, who, believe it or not, because of his signing bonus as an undrafted free agent, is making more than Calvin Anderson, despite the fact that Drew Himmelman has yet to take an NFL snap.
Which you could potentially spin as a positive in that we're getting Bowles like good level production for cheap at $5 million. And then also that we're not paying Juwan James to not be on the roster. So his cap hit, you know, his cap hit was included in there, you know, before the team released him before his injury. So at least there's a, you know, one silver lining on that, but that doesn't help. That doesn't help the right tackle position. It doesn't help whoever stands back there stay upright. That's for sure.
And if he wins his grievance, well, no, that's fine. As I say, if he wins his grievance, does that mean his money goes back in terms of our cap hit for the 2021 season?
I believe the grievance was just for a portion of it. It was like a $2 million signing bonus or something, but the significant portion of his hit isn't coming back, okay, to my understanding.
Yeah, that's one of those that I'm like, starting to get really, really into like contract law and, you know, NFL contract esoteria there. But
I want to touch on something you mentioned with Munchak, and this came up when I was, so I'm in the middle of doing like the position by position breakdowns of, you know, all the rooms. And I got to the offensive line and I kind of came up on like what you just said. And again, I'm not here to do like the hot take calling for anyone's job thing, but we are entering year three with Mike Munchak, and the Broncos still have a huge questions across the offensive line outside of Bowles. Like, I understand, like, I'm not saying it's all Munchak by any means, like part of it's, you know, having the resources, but, and I also understand, you know, the offensive line takes a while to develop, but like, he hasn't done it yet.
I would say, I mean, we just got done talking about Bowles making that jump. Yeah. And to me, like when you brought Mike Munchak in, that was kind of like job number one, right?
Yes.
And so I think that buys him a little bit of time.
I'm not trying to say he's a failure by any means. I'm just saying like we're in year three. I feel like we're getting to the point where if the offensive line is bad, there will start to be some cawing out in like the media sphere and fans getting kind of upset about this because like he's had a reputation as the best offensive line coach since Scarnecchia retired.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, Joe, you could probably speak to this, Mahoney, you know, is, with your expertise on it, but like the coach of the offensive line, like giving him continuity is probably the best thing that you can do for him. And Denver, tried to get that, particularly at the right tackle position, just hasn't had that continuity. And so I feel like it's been better over the last 2 years than it has been previously. You've had Reisner staying, you've had Bowles staying, and then since they brought in Graham Glasgow, that's at least three solid guys. Who knows at center this year if Cushenberry stays, that's a fourth that you bring back. But, you know, there it's still been at least one or two guys in flux almost every year.
Yeah, well, and I think part of the biggest failing on the offensive line last season was Cushenberry. Yes. I mean, I love the fact that he was able to play every single offensive snap, but he was the weak link, and teams' defensive coordinators exploited that pretty regularly. He did get better as the season wore on, but you know, his play dragged down the play of Dalton Reisner. It dragged down the play of Graham Glasgow. And it was a ripple effect, right? When your center is the weak link and teams know that they can beat you with A-gap blitzes all day long, they're going to start using A-gap blitzes all day long. And now your playbook is limited because if you have to keep a running back in and have him, you know, essentially doubling and checking those A gap blitzes on any pass, it basically takes the running back out of the passing game. And it also makes you, you know, use a guy like Philip Lindsay, who's just not going to be able to stop a 240-pound linebacker barreling up the A gap very readily. So it limits your playbook. It limits your offensive formations because you can't use your smaller running back, or you can't send a guy like Melvin Gordon out into the pattern, you know, on a flare pattern, because you got to keep him in to help your center.
And you had a young quarterback who was behind Cushenberry. And so like both of those guys didn't help each other out. Right. And yes. I know Drew Locke over the offseason, I think, kind of threw Cushenberry under the bus a little bit. It felt like on some of that, of just saying, you know, oh yeah, he's getting there on some of the blitz call outs and stuff, but it's like a veteran quarterback would get you out of some of those situations too.
Oh yeah.
So it was just like a double compounding thing that, teams exploited, like you said.
In a way, it felt like the Broncos were kind of caught with their pants down with like COVID, because they were planning on having Cushenberry kind of ramp up to play and have somebody else kind of there. And then Cushenberry was clearly the best player out of a bad bunch of centers because they went cheap at center last year because they paid Melvin Gordon. And then Cushenberry wasn't ready because they didn't have a preseason, but they had no one else. And yeah. And to your point, Joe, I want to say he improved. And I thought that, like, yes, he improved, but he was still bad at the end. It's not that he was good, but he improved from being like abysmal to being bad. And I'm not saying that to hate on Cushenberry. I'm just like, I've recently gone back over some of those last games, And he's still clearly the weakness on the offensive line.
Yeah.
And that's saying a lot based on the right tackle play.
Yes,
and, true. You know, if we're talking about Broncos getting caught with their pants down, I would say this year at right tackle, like you just mentioned, Joe, in terms of them passing over the tackles in the draft, and everybody knew that Juwan James wasn't coming back this next year. Nobody, you know, anticipated he'd get injured this in the offseason, but he's rarely made it through a full season. And so for them to not have a contingency for right tackle is kind of – You know my feelings on the subject.
And I know, like, I feel like I've beaten this to death because I know I wrote about it right after the draft. I know, Joe, you and I both wrote about it right after the draft. But knowing what the developmental curve is for an offensive tackle, the fact that they didn't grab a tackle in the draft when they knew, everybody knew that Juwan James, even if he was healthy, was going to be a 1-year guy. Like, they were not going to keep him after this year unless he just blew their minds because he was so good. So the fact that they didn't plan for that, to me, does seem like a stark failure, like just pure failure.
Yeah, unless, and this is a huge unless they know something that we don't, like Calvin Anderson is ready to make the jump into a starting tackle. But,
yeah,
you know, that we'll see that, because if he's there at this point, we'll see that in training camp. We'll see that at the start of the season. We'll see that in preseason.
But
if he's at that point, he will beat out Irving. He will beat out Massey for the starting right tackle spot. But if he were at that point,
and why would they sign two guys?
Pushback, why would they sign both Irving and Massey, ostensibly to fill the gaping hole at right tackle?
They signed Fleming, right? Was it?
Yeah, it's Cameron
Fleming or Cameron Irving.
Sorry. No, you're good. They're both Camerons. I knew who you meant.
Yeah,
I was about to say the same thing though, Joe. Like, if they believe, and again, I'm not ruling it out. Like, Calvin Anderson, like he has the feet and like. All the reports suggest he has the kind of work ethic you want. But if the Broncos really thought that that was the possibility, like, they probably wouldn't have hedged their bets twice. They would have probably grabbed a veteran, not two.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that Fleming is also a backup at guard. And that's, it's not a bad thing to have considering that Glasgow missed some time last year with injury. And I want to go back to center for a little bit, because if you think about the last two guys who've been the starting center for the Broncos for any significant amount of time, you had Connor McGovern, who was basically like a year and a half, but McGovern essentially had a redshirt season, right? I mean, he basically as a rookie did not play. And then you go back to Matt Paradis before that, and Matt Paradis, same thing. He didn't play at all as a rookie. And so both of those guys had a year to get their bodies into NFL shape and to acclimatize to the speed of the game and the speed of the mental processing of the game, which is critical more so at center than it is at guard or at tackle, because there's a lot more mental stuff going on for the center in terms of telling the other guys on the line, hey, look, I remember seeing this in film. They're going to run a stunt. Because that the guy right there is got his hand, he's not putting his weight on his hand, so that's a stunt. I know they're going to run a game on me right there. So when he calls it out to the guard, there's a lot of mental stuff that has to go on. And with a rookie coming out of college, even coming out of the national championship team, he's still not going to be at that point. He's not going to be anywhere close physically, maybe mentally, no. And that's, I think I'm convinced, and this is from playing center in college, that the reason that we gave both McGovern and Paradis those redshirt years was for them to get up to speed mentally, because I think physically, I don't know that either one of them really changed their soma type much in the year that they had not playing in the NFL. I think what it was all about is getting your head ready and right to play in an NFL game.
Well, and that's why I thought it was so interesting that they went and grabbed Quinn Meinerz to potentially push Cushenberry, because not only is he going to have to acclimate to the pro game, but he's coming from D3 and they didn't even play last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if it's even just a little bit of a hedge, a hedge against if Cushenberry doesn't take another step this upcoming year and you let Meinerz sit for a little bit. And I mean, they picked him up in the third, right?
Yeah, third round.
Same round as Cushenberry.
So that's an interesting one. I mean, I think I'm with you, Joe, in terms of the head scratching a little bit from a draft perspective. Like, I was really happy with Patrick Surtain as a player, and I said this right after the draft. Mm-hmm. I was overjoyed with Patrick Surtain as a player. I was not happy about what that meant for the direction of the team or what that meant for like where they were choosing to go. And it meant that they were choosing to throw up their hands and say, we're going to go to competition with Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock, unless it meant there was, you know, something on the back burner with Aaron Rodgers, and you know, who knows how that plays out. But at this point, you can't assume that they were planning for that this far, you know, into the season. And so they forcibly chose to pass on a quarterback, and who knows if it works out. But I mean, I think Surtain's going to be a great player, and so I like that pick. I hated the pick for running back. I didn't like the trade up even more, but they ended up making up for that by, you know, coming back into the and kind of making it a wash essentially. I still don't like taking a running back high. I mean, I put this out on Twitter around the same time. We've had five now running backs in the second, third, or first round in the last, you know, 10 years. You've had Ronnie Hillman, No'Shawn Moreno, Royce Freeman, Monte Ball. Monte Ball was a second rounder. Mm-hmm. And
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The two guys that have gotten the most starting snaps for the Broncos have been C.J. Anderson and Philip Lindsay. And then, you know, Melvin Gordon, who they bring in via free agency. And so, you know, obviously past performance isn't indicative of the future, but it's just I'm just not about throwing darts at the board in the second round at running back. But, I mean, I like the guy. I think he's got some talent. I just don't like where he was picked. So it's Surtain and Wildims both, like, I like the player. I'm just not a huge fan of the process that went into getting them on the team. Now they're on the team, you know, I think they'll be good.
Well, and your concern about the process is honestly my biggest concern kind of going forward in terms of like the direction of the Broncos, is because like you look at what Peyton did. And I've been thinking about this because I kind of thought when I woke up this morning, I was going to bug you guys about this. He took a corner, and again, like, and I'm not trying to bash the players again, like anybody listening, like this is purely from a process standpoint. Cornerback tends to be a pretty quick hit player. Usually a rookie season is kind of an adjustment and then they're ready to go. Running backs basically right away, they're ready to go. Like your rookie season is probably going to be as productive as any other year, unless the guy is like a phenom. So like they took two players that are safe and easy hits like early. And instead of a quarterback who would solve potentially a long-term problem for 10 to 15 years, and a tackle who, if he hits, would solve a problem for after a development period, which takes 2 to 3 years, usually, ends up solving a problem for about 10 years. And so what ends up happening now is now if everything kind of goes, let's say realistic, like let's say Teddy Bridgewater wins the quarterback competition, and after the year he's a free agent. Well, at that point, and again, on the same note, Bobby Massey and Cameron Fleming finish out the year. They play between the two of them. One of them looks okay, but they're both free agents after the year. Well, then we're back to square one next season where the Broncos need a quarterback and they need a tackle. And if they draft one, they both have to develop still. So it just, it doesn't solve the issue.
I totally agree. And I'm honestly of the opinion that Denver currently is playing for 7-9 or above 500. I think that's like was the, and you can, you know, you can say playoffs, you can beat the drum and do the whole like cliche stuff that coaches say in the off season, but the Broncos are trying to get above 500 this year. And I think that was their focus. You see it in the moves in terms of a guy like Teddy Bridgewater. It's the safe picks. It's the play now picks. It's getting everybody together. It's trying to turn around some of this horrible momentum that we've had over the last couple of years of winning 4 and 5 games. I honestly think that's their goal currently this year.
And this is my biggest issue with Peyton, is if that's the plan, you're wasting what you have with Von Miller. You're wasting what you have with Cortland Sutton, Bradley Chubb on rookie contracts. Justin Simmons, Garrett Bowles are on the cheap part of their extension. Next year, they're going to be expensive. Like, this is the, like, the Broncos have $30 million in cap room. And again, that's enough cap room. And maybe Peyton had the plan to get Aaron Rodgers, or before all the allegations of sexual assault, misconduct, all that stuff, maybe go and get Deshaun Watson. Like, I understand that that may have been the plan, but those plans didn't go as you hoped. And you had Justin Fields fall in your lap and you went the way you did. And now if you're playing for 7-9 or 8-9 or, you know, hovering around 500, maybe if we're lucky, make the playoffs. Well, next year, Von Miller's probably gone. Realistically, they're probably not going to pay him what he's going to earn on the market. And I'm not trying to be a hater. I hope he stays. But, like, this is probably the most talented supporting cast a quarterback is going to have in Denver for the next 3 or 4 years, just because of the cap dynamics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to the question, like, the overall question, are you confident in the direction of the Broncos? I would say I am, you know, meh on George Payton currently, only because of the fact that I think, and I've said this before, and I'm not trying to make it a hot take. I actually honestly believe this, that I think you could probably take half the GMs at the NFL level and, like, the big moves, right? Not the day-to-day stuff, right? But, like, the big stuff that they do in terms of who you pick in the draft, free agent, you could probably outsource that to Twitter or your, you know, your top 10 most educated fans and probably get the same results. Like, it's not this massive, like, it's not rocket science what George Payton did this offseason. And I've said before that I don't think he did anything different than John Elway would have done. I mean, he came in and hit autopilot. He picked up a veteran quarterback. He went with the safe options. He kind of restocked the roster, reshuffled, pulled in some veteran talent, and they're going to see what happens. Like, he didn't make any type of big moves. Now, maybe that pays off, but it feels like if that's the MO of the new GM, we're just going to be in kind of that, let's get over 500 for a while until something significant happens.
So Jeff Fisher, 7-9 bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at it, right, I mean, what's the goal, right? The goal is to win the Super Bowl. Okay. Well, this team as constructed is not going to win the Super Bowl, because this century, there've only been two defensive teams with crap offenses that won the Super Bowl. And that would be the Ravens way back at the turn of the century and the Broncos with the no fly zone. Every other team that had a really good defense at least had an offense that could win the game if it had to. I mean, you could say that the Buccaneers last year won it with their defense, but Tom Brady actually had that offense running really well at the end of the season. And, you know, there are a lot of parallels there with what the Buccaneers did in terms of bringing in a veteran quarterback and surrounding him with talent. And then essentially riding the defense and a quarterback that wasn't going to make mistakes, at least until he got to the Super Bowl, to a Lombardi trophy. So, yeah, I mean, realistically, the Broncos aren't going to win the Super Bowl this year without, you know, Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. What are we playing for this year?
Well, right? And given that, I think that to your point, Joe, Rowles is, you know, if we're just shooting for 500 or whatever, and then we wipe the slate clean again at the end of the season,
what are we?
I think that's
doing?
Where the there's no vision, I think, and I mean, it could very well be, let's see what happens this year and then hit a hard reset. I mean, we've said before, this will be Vic Fangio's third year, right? And he may not have a winning season in 3 years in Denver. And I don't know how you know, I like Vic Fangio, but I don't know that you keep a coach after 3 straight losing seasons. And so maybe that's the plan from George Payton, is let's hit autopilot, see what happens, and then just start over.
And I got to say, as a fan, that if that's the plan, it's about as uninspiring as it gets.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a downer. Like, again, like I apologize, but I've been thinking, the more I've been doing these position breakdowns, I've just been thinking, like, what is the goal this year? And people get mad at me on Twitter, and people are starting to get mad at me with Maha Report, because, like, I'm apparently the Aaron Rodgers guy. I was the Deshaun Watson guy before all the allegations, and now I'm the Aaron Rodgers guy. But here's my thing. And this has come up when I was talking to Seth Galina from PFF. The point is to win a Super Bowl. Like, that's what you do this for. Like, if you're a GM who's here to just write out a 5-year contract and be a GM and just, like, sit on your coattails, like, I'm not a big fan of you. And I'm not saying that that's what George Payton is doing, But if the Broncos are just kind of hitting autopilot and that's what they're doing, I will be pretty critical of it because I think that's bullshit. I think fans deserve better, and Denver fans, like Bronco fans, deserve more than that. And they have a roster that they could push for the Super Bowl this year if you make the moves to do it. And that's why Aaron Rodgers makes so much sense. Or like, and again, before the allegations, I'm not trying to apologize for it, but that's why a big time quarterback makes sense. Cause like the Broncos have the formula to follow that Buccaneers blueprint this year.
But you need to make moves. That's why it made sense to try to go big with a young quarterback in the draft. And yes, you know, I wasn't super sold on Fields, but I think he'll be good. And, you know, maybe they didn't think he was the guy. I know they, I heard they liked, was it Lance better? I think that was kind of the guy that they would have picked if he fell to them. So we'll see how Lance pans out. But, it, you know, maybe that was the guy that they had their eye on, and they actually were planning to get one. Who knows? But I do think, like, riding this middle ground at quarterback really doesn't get you anywhere, and it kind of wastes this roster. And I think that's what – I'm struggling with as a fan this year is I'm really excited about the roster. You look at the roster, I think we're going to have a really good team this year. I think we're going to have a dang good defense that'll be fun to watch. And so it's just a shame because it feels so much like the last couple of years where you start to look at the roster and go, man, we could really do something. Ah, but what about that offense? What about that quarterback? And I'm worried that a couple games into the season, we're just going to, you know, unplug the laptops and chuck them after and say, okay, let's, I mean, the season's, you know, you can go ahead and pack it in. You know, we make the joke that Scotty from Mile High Report, one of the staff writers, that, you know, about week four every year, he just kind of packs it in. He's like, yeah, we're done. We're not doing anything this year. And it's true. Like that could very well happen this year. You go four games in and kind of see like, yeah, it's not happening this year.
That brings me to my next question then. Who do you think wins the quarterback competition on this side of training? Like before training camp opens, just kind of based on, you know, where we're at. And this is assuming that Aaron Rodgers isn't coming.
I think Bridgewater wins it. I think if you look at Vic Fangio being a defensive coach, wanting the guy who is the quote unquote slow and steady, and really isn't going to make you make the mistakes or make as many mistakes that hurt your team. I think Fangio is going to side with Bridgewater unless Drew Lock has made a huge jump in the off season in terms of his ability to make decisions. And I think that's really what it's going to come down to for him because, you know, we were talking before the show about the end game situations, and there was the one end game drive where I was looking at where the Broncos were down by one touchdown against Kansas City, and you know we're driving, and I'm looking at this play, and I'm like, okay, yes, the Chiefs had pretty much everything covered, you know, and this was a do or die situation. It was like fourth and five with 40 seconds to play and no timeouts. And, you know, we've got to get
but is that where Tyrann Mathieu cups the post?
Yep.
And picks it off.
And,
yeah. Yeah.
And if he had checked it down to Gordon probably picks up the first down and gets out of bounds. And we have another play, but it's one of those situations where there wasn't a good option for him to throw the ball to. They had everything covered. He went with, and actually I think you discussed it, Joe, in the film chat, we were, you know, going back and forth where I posted some JPEGs and you're like, yeah, this he was probably coached to throw it at Judy there.
But yeah.
Okay. All right. So, you know, but it's one of those things where, there were a lot of situations that last season where you looked at it and you're like, yeah, he just made the wrong decision here. You know, and is he going to get to the point where he makes the right decision here? And how much rope do you give a quarterback in terms of making bad decisions before you finally just say he's not going to ever make the right decisions? You know, the first rounders get a lot more rope, second rounders don't. But at this point, you know, we've gotten 18 starts from Locke. So it's not like people can say that he hasn't had that much experience yet. Has he reached the breaking point or the inflection point where, you know, things start to click? And, you know, we've discussed that before in terms of how many games, how many starts that is. but he hasn't yet, or at least he hadn't last season. Arguably, you could say maybe in the last five he had, but yeah, it's tough.
I think to me, like, if you're gonna roll the dice, or if you're gonna, like, all the stuff that we've talked about in terms of where the team's at, I think you might as well roll the dice on Locke, and because the upside's bigger if he hits, and then you've definitively kind of just run his time out. But given that, I think the way that the team, like, the decision making up to this point, I think they'll easily lean Bridgewater because I think he's going to be a lot more stable at the quarterback position. I think he fits Pat Shurmur's offense better. I think he'll be better than Drew Locke in the offseason. However, he's, again, a one-year rental. And so what do you do if he ends up playing well? Do you now try to make the decision to pay him and all of that? And so I think best-case scenario would be Locke making that step and them just trying to go big on him panning out. But I don't think he will, and I think Bridgewater ends up being the guy that starts. And, you know, maybe that works out this year. Maybe he ends up playing better than he has. And, you know, we were talking about it before the show. It wasn't in the greatest situation in Carolina. And so maybe he finds a niche a little bit in Shurmur's offense with the weapons Denver has around him. But I think best case scenario for the Broncos would be if Drew Locke can make that step. But I'm with you, Joe. I think that Bridgewater is the guy that ends up starting this year.
I am really torn on who will start, just because the Broncos have treated Drew Locke like he was a first-round quarterback. Like, rightly or wrongly, they have treated it like that last year, and now they did this year. They brought in a bridge or a hedge, but they didn't bring in, like, somebody who really is going to just push him out of the way, like most second-round quarterbacks that had the kind of season Drew Locke had last year. You and I looked at this, like, going back to 2000 – generally speaking, yeah, first-round quarterbacks are going to get enough rope to hang themselves. But most quarterbacks, like, if you looked like Drew Locke did last year, you're done. Like, that's the end of it. And it wasn't so far. And again, I'm not trying to root against Drew Locke, but I think I'm conflicted about this because the Broncos brought in Bridgewater, who may very well be good enough to beat him. But if it's close enough, is management going to kind of put a thumb on the scale and kind of give Drew Locke the run? And there's a significant portion of Broncos country that seems to believe that that's going to be what happens. And at the same time, I'm with both you guys in that Teddy Bridgewater is better pre-snap. He makes better decisions consistently post-snap. He's more accurate.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
He's a better player, like, based on last year's tape, and it's not close. And I'm not saying that Bridgewater's faultless, but he looks like the better player.
I almost think it's the other way around, potentially, given what we've seen from George Payton and Vic Fangio. If you're coaching for your job, if it's even close between Bridgewater and Locke hasn't, like, far and away just stepped up and proved that he's made the jump, if I'm gunning for, you know, if I'm coaching for my job, I'm putting Bridgewater on the field. So I think if there's any thumb on the scale from the coaches or management, it's going to be towards the winning games right now side and not throwing picks.
And that's where I think it comes down to. I think, you know, if this team is legitimately anywhere from a 6-10 to a 10-6 team, right? And though that plus or minus two wins are determined by the quality of the quarterback play. And if that plus or minus two wins, I mean, if we finish 9-7, I think Fangio keeps his job. If we finish 6-10, I think he's out. I think they're going to look at it and say, you had 3 years. We had three straight losing seasons. There was very little progress from a franchise perspective. We're going a different direction with head coach. But, you know, 9-7, he might keep his job. Heck, even 8-8, he still might keep his job, because he could at least say, Yeah, well, we made some progress year over year. We went from 5-11 to 8-8. That's plus 3 in wins. That's a pretty big gain. The issue comes down to, you know, do we think that there is a 2-win difference between starting Teddy Bridgewater and starting Drew Lock? And that really comes down to a speculation on how much Drew Lock, or if Drew Lock, has improved any relative to what he showed last season.
And that's,
and we can assume that he's improved some. The question is, how much is some?
Yep. And I want to chime in just that, like, again, this is before the preseason, so the tape doesn't lie. We'll get a good chance to see how that competition kind of bears out. And I do believe that it will be an open competition. And the one thing in that that kind of sticks in my mind, this is why I think it will be Bridgewater that ends up winning it, is going back to OTAs. I remember, I want to say it was the fan Cecil Lammy, and he said, like, when he was watching practices, he basically was like, it's same old Lock. Like, there's good games, or there's good plays, but it's the same guy. Like, he's still making the same kind of issue, like, mistakes. And it's like, if that's the case, if the coaching staff is the ones that decide it, I think it's Bridgewater easily. If it ends up being some sort of situation where Elway has a say, or Payne's invested in the long-term situation, like, then I have questions. But I do think the coaching staff has every reason to put the best guy out there. And I do think that that will be Bridgewater.
I would just like to say too, that if somehow, and I said this back when the news first broke, if George Payton somehow does pull off the Aaron Rodgers thing, particularly this late in the game, I'll drive to friggin' Mile High and start laying the concrete for his statue, like, right now, if he's able to pull that off. I mean, so I'll take back everything I said about George Payton if that happens. But so I think that's, you know, a minuscule possibility still that we, at least I'm still hopeful for, but we'll see.
I'm going to argue with you and just say that I still think it happens. And again, this is why everybody thinks I'm crazy or I'm obsessive, or, like, I've gotten a lot of that lately. But here's my thing. At this point in the game, it comes down to, somebody asked this, so this is actually answering a question from a listener. Somebody asked, why hasn't it happened yet? And the thing is, if you're the Packers, before June 1st, you had no financial, like, there was no reason to do it. It was going to cripple your cap. Well, after June 1st, you're probably holding on, hoping that Aaron Rodgers comes back with his tail between his legs and decides that he'll play this year. And yeah, he missed OTAs, but it's OTAs. Like, if you're the Packers, you don't care until he's starting to miss actual games that matter. And at that point, like, if he misses the beginning of training camp and it kind of starts to bleed into the preseason, I could see it happening. We don't know if that's going to happen. There's not, you know, we have AJ Hawk, who has hung out with him for a couple hours. We have all of his former teammates. We have everybody kind of speculating on it. But Aaron Rodgers hasn't come out and said what he's going to do. And I think until he does that, we don't know. And if we don't know, I'm going to continue to believe that it could happen, just because I would rather believe that Aaron Rodgers comes to town and the Broncos chase the Super Bowl. And we're all hoping to God that Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater is good enough to make the most of this roster.
I mean, I do think the two things that point towards – it being still an open door is that across the NFL, it's pretty definitive that nobody thinks Aaron Rodgers will be playing for the Packers. Like, very, very few people think Aaron Rodgers will be playing for the Packers this year. Now, they don't know how that shakes out and what that means for where he'll play or anything like that. But that's one thing that's, like, pretty sure.
Adam Schefter was on the PFF podcast with Chris Collinsworth, I want to say Tuesday. And he said that he got a text from a reliable source that said, quote unquote, he's dug in. And again, you know, who knows? But to your point, yeah, like, there are people that I trust that basically are saying, like, he does not want to play for the Packers. Who knows what happens, but he doesn't want to.
Yeah. So that, I mean, so that's the one thing that's still hanging out there. And then the number two thing is, it's pretty, this is less, like, I think, consensus, but the kind of the sentiment and rumbling across the NFL spheres is that the best destination for him and his preferred destination would be Denver. And so, like, just even those two data points to me is plenty enough to put a, you know, put a little doorstop there to keep the door open enough, at least until the season starts.
And the other part to that, and again, I'm, I went and looked this up when I was talking to Eric Jensen on Green Room yesterday. Based on just, you know, the cap numbers, there are only four teams who could afford a trade for Aaron Rodgers with the cap situation, with his cap, you know, post-trade, without adjusting the rest of their roster. And again, teams are willing to probably adjust their roster for Aaron Rodgers, so, like, how much does that matter? But there's four teams that can afford him without having to do that. The Browns, who have Baker Mayfield, and, you know, probably want to extend him. That's been the word.
And Baker Mayfield's, I mean, he's pretty good, better than Aaron Rodgers. I'm kidding. Everybody knows I'm a massive Baker Mayfield fan.
I like Baker Mayfield. But so the Browns kind of loom as, you know, like a potential big sleeper. But Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to go to the Midwest. He wants to go west, which is a whole, you know, whole thing. He doesn't have a no trade clause. But Jacksonville, they're not going to trade for Aaron Rodgers. I'd be floored. And then the Jets. And the Jets just drafted Zach Wilson. So they're in a similar boat as the Jaguars. So really, of the four teams that have the money to do it without making significant moves to the roster, it's the Broncos or the Browns. And I don't think it's the Browns.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, it still could happen. I don't know what to believe anymore about, you know, all the tea leaves that are being read in terms of he wants to stay, he wants to go, he doesn't want to play for him. He's had a spat with the GM and the director of player personnel, and, you know, we'll see what happens. At this point, I'm kind of focusing on what we've got, and right now, offensively, we don't have a roster that's going to scare many defensive coordinators, mainly because our quarterback is the limiting factor.
Yep.
I think other than that, the other two big question marks to me on the team in general are also on the offensive side, which is unfortunate, to your point, Joe. And we've kind of gone over that, right, with right tackle and center. I mean, you look across the defense, there's not a lot of question marks. My probably biggest question mark would be defensive line depth in general, right? And that's both edge rusher and interior defensive line. Who's, you know, who's going to be that guy that steps up as the third pass rusher? And really, if one of the two have to miss time between Bradley Chubb or Von Miller, do we see a massive drop off in pass rush again? And I don't think we really have an answer there. But again, that's a depth conversation. That's not a starting conversation. I think you look at the starters across the defense, and they're solid as, you know, as they can be. And so I think all the question marks are on the offensive side. And fortunately, it's less than it was last year with Cortland Sutton down. I mean, you've got the receiver core is better than they've been in a long time. But you still have those two question marks on the offensive line and then obviously quarterback.
So long as the Broncos have the best defense in football, the right tackle situation, the center situation, and the quarterback situation all come up roses, the Broncos could go to the Super Bowl.
You know, I think you could probably just take the quarterback situation panning out with Aaron Rodgers, and you could figure out the center and the right tackle stuff if you've got him on the team paired with the defense.
But. Yeah, well, I mean, you look at the years with Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning always made his offensive line better.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers is the same. He makes his offensive line better. You know, Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys. He did it to the Broncos a couple of times the last time we played the Packers. He will get a couple of offside penalties every game just by hard counting. And he's the master of, you know, throwing the 50-50 ball because, well, they jumped off sides. I'm going to take a shot at the end zone.
Yep.
So, you know, it's little things like that. But he also, you know, he helps the offensive line by getting rid of the ball, by knowing where he's going with the ball, by knowing what the defense is trying to do. And so, yeah, I mean, if we get Aaron Rodgers, he immediately makes the entire offensive line better just by being Aaron Rodgers.
And so that kind of feels like a good way to end it. If the Broncos get Aaron Rodgers, I feel really, really good about the direction of the Broncos for the next probably 3 to 4 years. If the Broncos do not get Aaron Rodgers, I have serious questions about 2022. And I think you guys both agree with me.
Yeah. I think unfortunately, I think we're headed towards a massive shakeup if this season doesn't go, or if the season goes the way that the last couple have. And so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, we've got, you know, the four most important positions in the game, right? You've got quarterback, you've got edge rusher, you've got left tackle, and you've got cornerback. You know, we have an edge rusher who's probably gone after, or, you know, an elite edge rusher who's probably gone after this year in Von Miller. We have a quarterback situation that has been and continues to be a question mark. And, you know, the only two of those that we really have locked down are cornerback and left tackle at this point. So, you know, you got question marks in 2022 at two of the most important positions of the 22 starting positions out there, not counting special teams. And we don't know what's going to happen with those, you know, and frankly, even if Von Miller has a great season in 2021, you know, does that mean we give him a big contract extension or try and keep him in Denver for another year and hope that the drop off doesn't happen in terms of his production really quickly? There'll be some questions that we'll have to ask of a good nature if we have a successful season and this defense plays to the level that a lot of us are really hoping it can.
Now, we don't have time to get into it right now, but I will go to the mat for Von Miller, even if he's limping along on one foot or something. I want him to stay in Denver, but I hear you. You know, you don't know what's going to happen after this year, and as he gets up in age, you know, you've got to start building some contingencies, particularly on that defensive line.
Yep.
But thanks for joining us, Joe.
This is fun.
It was good talking to you, and Jeff, it was good talking to you. It's been a minute.
Always fun.
If you guys have any questions for us, be sure to shoot them at us. Otherwise, go Broncos.
See you next time.
Yep. Have a good night. Go Broncos.